guys. Good morning, afternoon, night, evening, wherever you're listening to this podcast, and welcome back to Teachable Psych. My name is Sarah, your host, and this week I had the amazing opportunity to speak with Dr. Susie Galore, who is faculty at University of Massachusetts Boston and specializes in clinical work. Towards the end of the episode, you'll hear us speak about fear to continue on the trend with the holidays throughout the rest of the year. And yeah, I hope you guys really enjoy this week's episode, and I'll see you at the end. Whenever you're ready.
Hi, I am Susie Galore. I'm a faculty member at the University of Massachusetts Boston in the Department of Psychology, and I am also a faculty member in the Clinical Psychology Doctoral Program. And I teach some undergraduate courses as well as some graduate courses, but I'm mainly, you know, do clinical work and clinical teaching. So I teach principles of psychotherapy. I teach, you know, I supervise clinical students. I teach personality theories. And a new class I've been teaching and developing is called Psychology and Social Justice.
What is that about?
So that's, I'm really excited about it. I've always been really passionate about multicultural psychology and social justice education and activism. And so what I have done is, which I'm not new to doing this, but we don't have an undergraduate class that sort of looks at the intersection of psychology and social justice issues, how to understand systems of oppression and privilege in our country from a psychological viewpoint, but also how to understand social justice issues and social injustices in the discipline of psychology. So kind of going both ways. And it's a really exciting class to teach.
Oh, that sounds really interesting. Okay, so my first question, it's pretty broad. So How do you think psychology and education are related?
So psychology and education, I think we know a lot about the way people learn and think and the ways people use their, you know, different parts of their brain and different parts of their mind to incorporate information and to make sense out of it, to make it relevant and sort of personal to themselves. So I think there's a lot that psychology can offer educators in terms of understanding how to help their students learn most effectively. You know, there's whole disciplines within psychology, cognitive psychology, developmental psychology. I mean, there's educational psychology. But I think other areas are really relevant too, like social psychology. You know, we know that instructors and teachers, you know, come to their classrooms with, you know, certain values and biases and assumptions that can really impact the ways that they teach specific groups of students. Just even those, that kind of knowledge can make a big difference in how you are as a teacher, and really being mindful of those potential biases that might be shaping, you know, how you're responding to and teaching different students based on factors that you're not even thinking about. So there's a lot of research on implicit biases, for example, that could be hugely relevant to education and to establishing a more inclusive educational environment.
Okay, so do you think it would be beneficial if, like, undergrad students were required to take an intro to psychology?
I think introduction to psychology is a really great, you know, typically it might be a little different depending on the instructor, the institution. Of course, there's a lot of those factors, but overall, it's a really broad overview of all these different areas of psychology, a few of which I just mentioned. And they all contribute different kinds of theories and ideas to understanding what it means to be human and to understanding our mind and to understanding the ways that we understand our world and interact with our world, the ways that the things that shape who we are and why we are the way we are. And so I can absolutely see how having that broad understanding and that kind of broad overview of all those different things that impact us, all those different aspects of psychology that shape us, could be really great experience for undergraduates who are probably on their own for the first time, or living on their own for the first time, or away from their communities or their supports or their family for the first time, and really trying to, or just sort of starting to develop a little more independence. That could be really helpful. It could also be helpful for non-traditional undergraduate students who are coming back to school for a second degree or a second shot at getting a degree. It could be helpful for, you know, other non-traditional college students, you know, first generation college students or racial and minority college students, to have a better idea of how they can be most successful and, you know, have the best sort of tools to use their resources and their strengths throughout their time in college. So I can see that. You know, there's probably some parts of intro to psych that wouldn't be as interesting to everyone, but that's okay. That's true of every class, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So how did you like learning about your specific psychology topic? How does it change the way you view certain things?
So I was, you know, I majored in psychology as an undergraduate. And then I knew I wanted to go to graduate school, but I didn't know in what discipline. There's a lot of options. And I, after doing some research, I chose counseling psychology. So I have a PhD in counseling psychology, not clinical psychology, even though I practice as a clinical psychologist. I am a faculty member in the clinical psychology doctoral program. There's a lot of overlap between clinical and counseling psychology, but what drew me to counseling psychology specifically is its focus on understanding, you know, healthy individuals and focusing on you know, mental well-being, mental and emotional well-being and health and wellness, really emphasizing multiculturalism and social justice and understanding how people's environments can be really impactful, and not just a focus as much, as strong a focus on the individual and on psychopathology. Of course, we learn all about, you know, different you know, mental illnesses, and we learn about different treatments and different therapies and interventions. But like the focus of research is a little bit different. It's more focused on, like, you know, identity development and sort of more typical adjustment issues, not as much on severe mental illness or things like that. So I liked that it had a slightly different focus, a different emphasis, and that's been true throughout through my whole career. And when I started teaching full-time, because I used to be a clinician and primarily just did therapy, mainly with college students, actually. I worked in various college counseling centers. But when I transitioned to being an educator and teaching at UMass Boston, it completely shapes how I am as an educator, you know, having that psychology background and having that clinical background even more specifically. I don't think I'm that different as a professor than I am as a therapist or as a supervisor. I really care a lot about each individual, and I try really hard. It's not easy, but I try to get to know each of my students in some way, And I try to convey to them that I actually care about, you know, them as people. I see them each as individuals who have their own lives and their own relationships, and they have other things going on than just my class. And I think those are all really important. Those are all very important factors that I know is happening. And so I try to just be really real with them and transparent with them. And I want them to feel like I care about them as people. And I think that goes a long way, because I tell them, you know, if you're struggling, I want to hear about it. I'm going to try to help you. If you need an extension on an assignment, there's very few reasons I wouldn't offer that to you, because I want you to do your best. When they really truly like feel that I care about them as people, they seem a lot more invested in the class. And I think that is a great sort of foundation to set at the start of any new class I'm teaching. So I think my sort of lens as a psychologist is, you know, what shapes how I am as an educator.
So you mentioned doing therapy for college students. Did you only do it mm-hmm. for college students, or did you do it in multiple different age groups?
I have worked with folks from a wide range of ages. So I have worked primarily in college counseling centers. That is true. The last place I worked, I was at for 8 years at the University of New Hampshire. And I was a staff psychologist there. But I've also worked in other universities, including Harvard's Mental Health Service. I worked at the University of Maryland's Counseling Center for many semesters when I was a graduate student there. I've worked at Emory University and their counseling center in Atlanta. So I've been kind of up and down the East Coast. And so there's a lot of different kinds of college students, right? There's a lot of diversity across each of those places. And when I was a staff psychologist at UNH, I also had a private practice, a small private practice. And that's where I saw even more of a range, right, of non, you know, these were not college students. These were folks from the community. And I have worked with folks as young as 15 and folks sort of older in their mid-50s. So I've had a pretty wide range. But I would say the population that I'm most, that I've had the most experience with are college age, you know, young adult, emerging adults. That's kind of a term that is not, that's been, a lot of research is now done on this developmental period. That's not adolescence. It's not teenage years. It's not really adulthood yet. It's called emerging adulthood. And, you know, that period of time between like 18 and 25, like there's still a lot of growth and learning and development. And that would be probably where the most experience I have.
Okay. So how would you say therapy differs from those differing age groups?
Well, I think it depends on the therapist. So I would say that I have a therapy style. I have an orientation to therapy, and that's something that I teach in this advanced undergraduate course. I teach principles of psychotherapy. That's something that I teach and supervise for my, you know, clinical psych doctoral students. You know, you learn about all the different therapy theories and approaches, but then you have to sort of form your own sort of style. You sort of you learn about all the theories and you put them together in a way that makes the most sense for you, and in a way that is most flexible so that you can adapt what you do depending on the person that you're working with, because you can't really do the same thing for everyone. So age is certainly going to be one of those factors that would probably influence how I am in the room with a client, and if, you know, and what kind of therapist I am, but, or what kind of therapy I do, but it's not really that different. It might be like, it isn't even that different with younger folks. So, you know, I have seen a handful of teenagers, which feels like a very different age group than others and adults. But, you know, it's really, my style is really to be sort of centered and focused on the person, on the client, and really meeting them where they're at and really giving them as much room as I can. You know, and I'm a guide, you know, in this process, but to do the work that they feel they need to do to find, you know, to sort of learn about themselves and learn new things based on their own sort of timeline and pace and what they're ready for. You know, I might do some more sort of targeted interventions or ask some very specific questions and want to address very specific things depending on their circumstances and what's going on for them. But generally, I would say I'm what we'd call client-centered, humanistic psychotherapist, and it's really focused on each individual person and what they're bringing with them and what they need. And we kind of figure that out together. So it's not necessarily that I change depending on the age of the client. It's that I'm going to adapt to the particular individual. And that might have nothing to do with their age. It might have more to do with their particular circumstances or background or personality or whatever.
So for someone that wants to go into psychology and they know they want to do it as a career, are there any recommendations for like applying and like looking at colleges and their specific programs, or even just figuring out what specific branch they want to go into?
Yeah, I mean, I think you want to start as broad as possible so that you can really get to know all these different areas of psychology, because there's so many different areas. So when you say I want to have a career in psychology, do you have more specific ideas around that, or it's that general? That would be one question I'd start out with. Because if you know, for example, if what you're thinking, if what the person is thinking is, I want to be a therapist, then that's different than I want to have a, you know, I want to have some kind of career in psychology. I mean, psychology is so big and broad, right? So that's counseling, that's therapy, that's clinical. Then there's other topics or other disciplines where you would be working towards, well, I want to teach, I want to be an educator, I want to do research. That would be more like developmental psychology or social psychology. Those aren't really practitioners, right? They're not clinicians. I want to work more with groups or in communities. I want to do more, you know, more work based in like organizations. I don't want to do individual like therapy. So all of those questions are what you're sort of exploring. So take as many different psych courses as possible, and start to answer that question. And then when you have a better idea of maybe a particular area in psychology, then you likely are going to go to graduate school. It's very hard to do anything with just a psychology bachelor's degree. There are some options, but usually you need at least a master's degree to then really put your psych degree into practice, right? Whether or not that's being, again, a master's level or PhD or PsyD level, doctorate level therapist, or to be a teacher, or to be, you know, to do any number of things, you probably are going to need a master's degree. So then you want to start having experiences and getting involved in things that are not just in the classroom. You want to get experience working with faculty, maybe getting some research experience and asking faculty if you can join a research project that they're doing as a research assistant. Or when I was an undergraduate, I was a peer counselor, and I volunteered to be a peer counselor at my university's counseling center. And there was a group, and you had to take a class where you learned about different counseling skills and techniques. And there was a supervisor, and it was a great experience. I mean, that was really my first counseling center that I worked in, the first of many. So you start to have other not classroom experience. I think that's hugely important. So as soon as you have some ideas of things you're interested in and want to know more about, do them. You know, get involved in the psychology club at whatever institution you're at. There's usually a psych club. Talk to your faculty, especially in the courses that are really capturing your interest. What kinds of things do people do if they have a degree in social psychology or cognitive psychology or developmental psychology? And they'll be able to point you in certain directions. Well, you should get involved with this, or you should do some of that. I also worked as a volunteer when I was an undergrad at a crisis hotline. And I got a lot of experience, intense experience doing crisis counseling. So I was 20 years old and doing all these things, but it really helped me know that I wanted to go into this field.
So besides volunteering, how else should you incorporate yourself into these institutions to have more experience with psychology?
Mm-hmm. Well, like I said, talk to faculty and really try to develop some relationships there, because you never know what that's going to lead to. Faculty of courses you're taking that you're really interested in, you really love the topic, you love, some of the things you've been learning, ask the faculty member if there's research that you can get involved with to learn more about that area of psychology, but also to start developing an idea of if you like research, if you like to be involved in research, what kind of research. And you're going to meet through that process, you're probably going to meet more faculty, and you're going to meet graduate students, which is a huge part of, I think, another great way to learn about the field, the discipline, what graduate school is like, if it's something you want to do. I did have a really good connection with a graduate student who I met through doing peer counseling. And she was in the counseling psychology PhD program at my university. And that's how I learned about that whole field. She kind of mentored me through that whole process. And I don't know if I would have learned as much as I did or even known about it as an option if I hadn't met her and other graduate students at that time. So I think developing, trying to, as hard as it might feel for folks, introduce yourself to faculty, go up to them, ask them questions. It will help you in the classes themselves, as you probably already know, as a student. The more engaged you are, the more you're going to get out of it. So talk to your faculty, ask them if there are things that they think you should get involved with. There's different sort of opportunities at different universities. So like I said, my university had a peer counseling program. Not every university has that, but that was great for me. And then there's other areas of psychology. There's neuroscience, there's neuropsychology. So there's a lot of experimental psychology labs at most universities, research universities. And that's a whole other discipline and area. And the research looks really different. You're working with rats and mice and other animals and really learning about different kind concepts in psychology. So look for those kinds of opportunities.
Okay, thank you. So we're gonna move on to like the questions about fear now.
Okay.
So what is your general definition of fear?
Oh, general definition of fear. So I think we experience fear when we feel threatened, when we feel threatened by something or someone. And I think that's a very human reaction and a very important human response that, you know, I also teach, I've taught about evolutionary psychology. I mean, that's a really another sort of area that has contributed a lot of, you know, theories around why we have evolved to experience the things that we do. I mean, they must have, from an evolutionary standpoint, served some important function at some point. And I think fear was one of those, right? When I hear fear, as far as like the psychology behind that and the physical response, fight or flight is a very real physical response that happens in our brain. You know, we are primed to either, when there's a threat, either fight against that threat in order to survive or to run away from that threat in order to survive. So that was in place long, long, long time ago. And I think that's evolved to be a response we get to a lot of different kinds of threats. So we're no longer looking out for, there's a neuropsychologist, Rick Hansen, who talks about real tigers and paper tigers. And we need to protect ourselves from real tigers, right? And there's lots of real tigers around our world today here as well, not actual tigers, but very real threats. But what's happened is we also respond to a lot of paper tigers, things that we think are threatening or we think are going to harm us in some way or are going to hurt us. And we experience that same response, that fear. Maybe it's not as intense as like a fear response. Maybe it's anxiety. Maybe it's worry. You know, there's a lot of ways that that can look. But I think what we're doing is we're responding to something that we are scared of. We're scared that it's going to threaten us, that it's going to hurt us. And that's a good thing, but it's not so adaptive or helpful when it's a fear of things that aren't actually going to hurt you. And that's when it becomes maladaptive. That's when it isn't so helpful to us. And that's usually like in therapy, that's when we see people who come to therapy who are just always feeling really, I don't know, generally worried, generally anxious, or have specific fears that are not based in reality, and it's really disruptive. It could be a very specific phobia, or it could be a more general thing. It could just be people who are not feeling happy and not feeling happy with their life. And sometimes it is like a fear of, it could be anything from a fear of failure, so you just don't even try. It could be a fear of success, so you just don't even try, because what if I do this thing and I succeed and then I have to keep doing it? I mean, there's so many different things that can create that response. So that's my long answer to what I think of when I think of fear.
So in like haunted houses or movies, we know that we're going to be scared, but we still continue to watch it. Why is that?
So, I mean, I wonder if it's this kind of acceptable way that we can sort of have that experience, knowing that we're fine, knowing that we're going to be okay. I don't know. I've never really thought about, I mean, I do think it's related to something I teach in personality theories. There are some people that are kind of thrill seeking, you know, and they're much more of a risk taker. It might just have to do with certain personality traits that are more prominent in some people, and they just like having those experiences that really get their blood flowing, and they like to feel, I mean, they like to feel that sort of intensity, and that is something that doesn't, that isn't uncomfortable for them. And then there are people who find that very uncomfortable, and they are, you know, what we'd call more, you know, there are some people who say, like, I'm just more of a homebody. I like routine. I like stability. I don't like to be surprised. I have a harder time with change. You know, all of that is also just unique to us as individuals. We have a different set of personality traits. So maybe it's the personality piece that helps explain why some people actually seek that out. You know, some people are just more courageous, and they like to try new things. It's not a bad thing to not like trying new things. It's just a difference, you know, it's just a different characteristic.
That was actually part of my next question. I was going to ask, why do some people like being scared, or like, is it because of the thrill, or like maybe it also relieves stress?
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of where when I first started answering it. I mean, maybe it's kind of like this way of, you know, in another area of psychology, so psychodynamic psychology, think Freud, you know, the ego defenses. Perhaps you have learned that already. I'm sure you have. I mean, you can't learn about psychology without learning about Freud. But we've come a long way since Freud. So I hope you also have moved well beyond Freud. But, you know, a lot of it has stayed. And so there's one ego defense mechanism called sublimation. And I mean, that's coming to mind. Maybe it's this acceptable, this kind of socially acceptable way to have those reactions, you know, of like screaming and fear and, you know, moving and grabbing someone and, you know, like all the things you do to sort of protect yourself. We can't go through our day doing that when we feel afraid. You can't just like scream every time you feel afraid of something or uncomfortable in a situation. You can't like cower. You can't do all the things that, of course, you do in a haunted house. And it's fun. And it's kind of a fun way to do these things that you can't otherwise do. You can't otherwise behave that way. So that's a good example. I hadn't really ever thought of that. Of this concept called sublimation.
Do you like being scared?
You know, I actually I do like being scared. I do like scary movies, but what I like more is like thrillers. I like things that really keep me guessing. I don't necessarily like really gory like horror movies that way, but I do like to feel kind of on the edge of my seat and wondering like what's going to happen. I like psychological thrillers a lot. I like to sort of always wonder like what's going to happen or why that happened and really getting surprised. I like twists and turns. So yeah, I happen to like that kind of stuff.
So like mystery?
I do like mysteries a lot. Yeah. And I like reading, you know, and listening to podcasts.
I love reading.
That's good. That's not surprising. You seem very intellectual. You like to think about things. You like to learn. So I'd be surprised if you said you don't like to read.
Yeah. I mostly read like romance though.
Well, you know, sometimes it's nice to just also be able to not think so hard and just enjoy something.
Okay. Well, those are all the questions I had prepared for you today. Thank you so much for taking time out of your day to do this.
Yeah, thank you for inviting me. This was super fun, and I'm excited for you and what you're doing here. I think this is great. I love this.
Thank you.
Yeah. And when you're thinking about college, yeah, feel free to stay in touch.
I will. Oh my God. I was thinking about, because during the summer, like right before June started, mm-hmm. my dad took me to like the DC area, and I was able to just like walk around John Hopkins and then was it Georgetown. And it was really nice because like the weather at that time, but I don't know if I'd be able to endure the really freezing weather during the winter.
Yeah, where are you now?
I'm actually in Atlanta, so that's why when you said Emory, I was like,
Oh, you're in Atlanta. Yeah. That's so funny. Well, I grew up in Miami.
Oh.
So I never imagined I'd be, when I was in DC in Maryland, where I went to graduate school, I thought that was the most north I'd ever go. And that felt pretty north to me. But here I am in Boston, and it can get pretty cold. So yeah, that's definitely a consideration, but I loved living in Atlanta. I thought that was, it's just a great city. And I do miss Florida in some ways, but not in a lot of ways. I like the change of seasons. I think it's nice. And I think DC has a really good balance of having the seasons, but not like really bitter, bitter winters. It's really not, now that I've lived here, it's not that bad, but it is bad for someone who comes from the South. But anyways, I worked at the George Washington University Counseling Center for a couple of years. Mm-hmm. And that was awesome. I love DC. I was just there in August. Yeah. So they have some great universities. They have American University. They have, of course, where I went, which is not in DC, but right outside of DC, University of Maryland in College Park is an awesome university. Great psychology program. So yeah, lots of options.
Hi guys, welcome back. I hope you really enjoyed this week's episode, and I'll see y'all next time. Have a good rest of your day, morning, night, evening, wherever you are. And yeah, bye.